Gerritsen and Toth presents The Shift with Jack Johnson on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM and 94.5 FM.
We have finally reached the end of The Shift here on 94.5 FM and 1510 AM ESPN Kansas City. For the last time, I am your host, Jack Johnson. Producing behind the glass screen is Jake Gutierrez. Full show today, and again, the final show that'll be broadcasted here on ESPN Kansas City. The Shift will be no more after today, but if you're interested, you can always go check them out on the podcast page. You ever want to have those reruns? We all like reruns, don't we? Love reruns of 90s shows, 90s sitcoms, maybe more so 70s and 80s. Those will never go away. So it's not like this show is going to be erased, but coming to you live, not going to happen after today. Been a long run, been a fun run, and we've gone through Marco, we've gone through Jake, and the sad music goes over the airwaves. As I mentioned yesterday, the first segment we ever did was on Mecole Hardman 3 years ago. And today, I think we'll be ending it with some college hoops talk. We'll see when we get to that point. Maybe we'll have a fun segment to close out the show.
The question is, when we close this show out, are you going to shake my hand?
I will, of course. Okay. It has to be,
You're not going
to... It's more equivalent to...
You're not going
to
drum tang me?
No, the flyby. We'll get into that here in a second. I won't fly by you.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, this is like getting pulled off the court for the last time. You know, and they do the senior night. That's fitting, right? We're going to lead into some KUK State talk, but a senior night. They get you off the floor. You get your standing O.
Get your carnations thrown at you.
Yep. And the NFL would be equivalent to, you know, I don't think I've seen anything like that in the NFL, actually. A couple times you have a guy get pulled off. Like, who was that? One that comes to mind randomly was, I think, Landon Dickerson of Alabama. He had torn his ACL, was going to be a starter on their offensive line, and they let him go out there and snap the ball for one play and gave him like a standing O. But the NFL doesn't do it. Doesn't do it. Baseball does it. You get pulled off the field. Yeah. You know?
Standing O, you go out and have your curtain call.
We could have somebody come in and finish the show last 5 minutes.
You kind of Kelsey's farewell in Tampa was kind of different.
It was.
You know?
He just had to sit there sad on the sideline.
Right, and I don't think he finished out the game.
No, he didn't. And that, I think was unfortunate.
They pulled him out, you know?
Maybe it was his call, maybe it wasn't.
Right,
but
I think, I don't know.
It's tough. It's tough to walk away, but we've had a good run. No tears will be shed. I had wondered, too, actually, before this, how many radio hosts, and I guess it's very dependent how long you ran. You ran like 40 years. I think I'd get a little bit emotional if I was signing off for the last time.
Well,
I've only been doing this 3 years.
The thing with radio is that when you do your last show, you usually don't know that you're doing your last show.
That's so true.
I mean, for most instances.
Yeah. Unless you just heard that illustrious career. Right. You're retiring.
Right.
I'm not retiring. If I was retiring, maybe I'd be a little bit more emotional. Like, this is the last time I'm going to talk into a mic, but no. I think it's a little awkward if you cry on radio for a situation like that. And I didn't have a right to cry. Like, and people are just listening to me blubbering on a mic.
Well, I had a farewell show about two years ago.
Yours is different. You've been doing it for 20 years.
Right. But then I came back. I came back and they're like,
the Tom Brady retirement.
You leave again, then you're not getting another farewell. Fair enough.
No, I think there's a threshold. If I was to come on here and be crying.
I like that.
Yeah, man. I was going to say.
I did the Tom Brady.
If I was crying right now, I think it'd be a little awkward. You get to seniority. You get 10 years. You get tenure. You can be as emotional as you want.
Yeah, I put 20 in.
20, yeah, I'm saying. A decade to me is the threshold. You get to a decade, you have a right to be a little emotional about walking away from a show. Yeah. You got two decades in. so you can act however you want to act. Like, that was one show together for 2 decades, and then you left for a little bit, and then glad you're back now.
Yeah, it's good to be
glad you're back. It's like, that would have been funny if you did, like, a full 2-year, like, I was always coming back.
Yeah.
pulling the prank, pulling the leg of everybody out there. But, you know, you move on from it. You move on from it. Who knows? Maybe the shift comes back in the future. But right now.
You never know.
No. Right now, it is a no at this point in time. But stay tuned for what's next. But again, we didn't want to spend too much time in the opening parts of this. Just completely dedicating it to be the last show, because then we're going to be running out of time. We're not going to have enough time to talk about all the stuff we want to. Beginning with the game last night in Lawrence, Kansas. Kansas and Kansas State. Boy, that was quite the whooping the Jayhawks put on the Wildcats. And, you know, there are very few times that I look at a Kansas team, even when they are struggling, and say, yeah, I'm not betting on them here. I'm not betting on them in Lawrence. If you bet against them in Lawrence, if you were one of the people that took K-State in the points last night because they had lost to BYU and Baylor in back-to-back games, you simply just weren't doing your homework. KU hadn't lost on senior night, which was last night, hadn't lost on senior night since the early 80s. Roy Williams and Bill Self, and Larry Brown for that matter, never lost a senior night in Lawrence. 4 decades. So if you took K-State to make that game interesting, again, I say this, you were not doing your homework. This had all the signs of a blowout. It really did to me. And I know for those that have listened to the show before, you're saying, you're a KU guy saying that, and it's K-State. No, believe me, I have been critical of Kansas before. I have had my moments where I have completely counted Kansas out, more so on the road than Allen Fieldhouse. I mean, if you've watched this team under Bill Self, it doesn't matter if they are the number one team in the nation or they're 14th like they are right now. They just don't lose there. And when they play Kansas State, they don't lose in Lawrence. They may lose in Bramlage. They may lose in Manhattan. But folks, the Wildcats haven't won there since 2006. They've had a couple of close calls, but the majority of those games are not close. They are double-digit beatdowns for Kansas. And the reason last night it had the indications of a splattering is because K-State won in Manhattan. If KU had won in Manhattan, maybe they go into this game a little bit sleepy. You know, K-State's no longer on the NCAA tournament bubble. They're not getting in. But last night I looked at all the factors. KU's coming off back-to-back losses. They had lost to BYU at home. K-State technically still had a remote chance. They would have had to beaten KU and Lawrence, beaten Iowa State, and then won at least a game or two in Kansas City. Now they have to win the Big 12 tournament. There is no other way around it. There's no other way around it for Kansas State. If you are a Cats fan and you want them to get to the NCAA tournament, they got to win in Kansas City. They're going to have to win 5 games in 5 days or 4 games in 4 days. That's very unlikely at this point. They don't have the bench. They don't have the depth to do that. Another factor of this was that KU had the power to right the ship a little bit going into Houston. Number two, they're not going to lose back-to-back games at Allen Fieldhouse. Number three, they had a chance to basically stomp out Kansas State's season. That's a rival. I know Jerome Tang said early in the week, for this to be a rivalry, we had to beat them a few more times. I think it's the right thing to say, but also for the fan base, it's a rivalry. I hate it when people say, oh, we don't care about the others. Yes, you do. KU fans don't like K-State fans. K-State fans don't like KU fans. KU fans don't like Missouri fans, and Missouri fans don't like Kansas fans. But let's just not act like this game doesn't mean anything. It does. It absolutely does. And you could tell there was a little extra juice behind Kansas last night. And when things got out of control for Kansas State, KU made sure to not squander a lot of opportunities to step on their throats. And K-State is a team right now that's not playing good basketball. It has been a really, really tough 2 months for them. You know, they had beaten Kansas in Manhattan, and you kind of felt like, wow, that's the game to go. That's the game to kickstart you. And you're going to have a couple of big wins the rest of the way. They never took off from that. They lost to BYU in Provo. They lost again. And then they found a way to beat BYU and West Virginia back-to-back at home, nearly squandered a 25-point lead in the second half to a team that is still clawing for its 10th win, I believe. Like the worst team in the conference, who did beat Kansas. But I will say this, you can't blow 25-point leads in the second half. And that, to me, even though the Cats once again won in overtime, they're unbeatable in overtime. It was, can a team like that really go far? Can they really carry that momentum? And they proved they could not. They had an elimination game that we called it against Cincinnati, lost in the final seconds. And then they had a chance to walk into Lawrence and beat a vulnerable Kansas team, but Kansas was ready to go. And I think the best way I heard it described is when you are playing in Lawrence, when you are playing at Allen Fieldhouse, it is like facing Mike Tyson in round one and round two. If you can kind of hang in there and not be put on your ass, you can take the knockout blow. Well, you might be able to hang around for a couple more rounds. But the way that crowd is, the way Kansas plays, if you can't weather the knockout punch, you're not getting up off the mat. And I actually think K-State hung around for a little bit. I think they were only down 8 at halftime, so I thought, hey, they weathered the storm, but then they couldn't do anything in the second half. It's like they just kind of stayed on the defense. They weren't trying to throw any haymakers. Tyler Perry had 2 points in this game. He had the same amount of points as walk-on Patrick Cassidy for Kansas. Non-factor. Cam Carter wasn't good. Arthur Kaluma wasn't good. Really, Will McNair was the only bright spot for Kansas State. And I'm not going to say this was a failure of a season for Kansas State, but it does stunt that momentum a little bit for Jerome Tang. If Jerome Tang would have had back-to-back years, his first years as a head coach and at Kansas State, go to the NCAA tournament, even if they would have lost first round, you've built something that the expectation is, we're going to be here every single year, just so you know. And stuff did go wrong for Kansas State. Lose Quez Glover, lose Naquan Tomlin. Freshmen didn't really develop properly. Tyler Perry went through rough stretches. Cam Carter's gone through a 2-month-long rough stretch after he was, you know, basically leading the Cats and scoring every single game. It's tough to really spin this as, hey, we're building something really good here. I think they are. I really do. And again, the door can't be completely shut until they're eliminated in Kansas City. Now it's going to be a tall task to beat Iowa State, so you're looking at 17-14 going into Kansas City. We know the Big 12 at this point. We know the top teams. We know the ones that are likely going to win this thing, and it's probably not Kansas State. But the NIT could be an opportunity to continue playing and have that chance to at least have something to commemorate these players and commemorate this team. But I know for a lot of those players and that coaching staff, it's very frustrating. Because in anything in sports, really, it's about what have you done for me lately? Right? Anybody can say, well, what Jerome Tang did last year was unbelievable. And they're going to continue to say that. But as the years pass, you go, okay, well, what happened the year after? What happened in year three? What happened in year four? Right? It's so funny to me that when you win something, when you make a deep run, when you win a championship, I mean, hell, Bill Self won a championship 2 years ago, and then now we're all talking about, oh, this team's terrible, and you're more so focused on this team than you were 2 years ago, as it should be in sports. You celebrate wins. You celebrate a good year, and then you move on. You move on to the next year. What have you done? What can you do from here on out? And for Jerome Tang and this staff, it's another reload process. They're going to have to go through the portal again and find some key talent. I mean, their freshmen developed a little bit, but still very raw. And last night, I'm not going to say it was seen coming from a mile away. It was pretty noisy, though. I think you would have been completely oblivious to not see this coming. I mean, this would have been like a car coming down the highway, flashing their lights, blaring on their horn, and swerving. Like, you may not see it way, way down there, but if you didn't hear it, you just weren't paying attention. And this was a Kansas team that needed, quite honestly, they needed to bludgeon somebody to get some confidence back in them in case they just fell on that path. That game, that specific day, they fell right on the calendar. So for Kansas State, it's now pick yourself up off the mat and find a way to get some momentum going into Kansas City. And it's a great opportunity on Saturday, but also one that at this point feels insurmountable. I mean, Iowa State, let's call it as it is, they're better than Kansas. You may get this game in Bramlage, but Iowa State's better equipped to beat you in Bramlage than Kansas is right now. So I would like to say if K-State had a little bit more momentum, they were playing a little better, I throw them a bone and say it could happen. I don't think it does on Saturday. So then you have another losing streak going into Kansas City, and you got to win 4 games in 4 days to keep your season alive. Door is still cracked open, but now it's win the conference tournament or you're done. And I said NIT, I actually don't know if an NIT is possible, because I know they can be a little bit tricky and a little bit strict with who they let in. If K-State loses to Iowa State and loses in the first round of Kansas City and they're 17-15, I don't actually know if they get in or they may decline it at that point. We'll see what's next for Kansas State, but that was not a good performance, as Jerome Tang would put it. As for the Jayhawks, this is the game that you were needing. This is the game that feels good to walk away from and say on senior night, we played well. Defense was good. You scored 90 points. The bench was a factor. They gave you 20-plus points. Forced a lot of turnovers against a team that turns it over a lot. Hunter Dickinson didn't shoot the ball well from the field, but grabbed you 20 rebounds. And that's the Hunter Dickinson we remember at the beginning of the year, where he's giving you 14, 15, 16 a game, and then he can grab anywhere from 17, 18, 19 boards a game. I thought that DeJuan Harris really facilitated things well. There was a couple moments in that game that a little bit sloppy, but that happens when you have a big lead. Johnny Furphy still, I don't want to say in the doghouse, but slowly working back into it. I think he's just a freshman going through growing pains. KJ Adams nails at the free throw line. You know that can be a little bit of a tough task for him, but absolute nails, 6 for 6. KU in general was incredible from the charity stripe in this game. They shot at 90%, 28 of 31 in this game. And from three-point range, a spot they really struggle, 46%. There's not going to be many times in the tournament that if KU plays like that, they'll lose. Nicholas Timberlake gives you 18. He was 4 of 5 from deep. Kevin McCuller gave you 19 to lead all scores. He was 7 of 7 from the free throw line. Again, it was about as sound as Kansas had played in quite some time. Now, it's, again, I am not going to just flip-flop back and forth about this team and, oh, now they go. Now they look good, because they very well could look discombobulated and disorganized against the number one team in the nation on Saturday. But if you wanted any confidence going from this game to Houston, you had to win like this. You had to beat your rival, avenge that loss by beating up on him pretty good, and that you did, winning 90-68. You had 4 guys in double figures. McCuller, Timberlake, Dickinson, and Adams. DeJuan Harris gave you 8. Furphy gave you 8. Even Almarco Jackson got in the scorebooks. Like, you walk away and say, this is a team that can go far in March. It's in the back of your mind if you're a fan of Kansas. This is the team you expect when they put it all together. Timberlake can shoot it. McCuller can give you 19. Dickinson gives you 15 and 20. DeJuan Harris gives you 8 points and 7 assists and 2 steals. KJ Adams gives you 16. Doesn't take 14 or 15 shots like he has in some of the losses. Only 10. Wasn't super efficient. He was 5 of 10, but he goes 6 of 6 from the free throw line. You're getting to the line. It's important. Now, here's also the reality. In my opinion, K-State is not a team you really want to compare to a first-round game or a second-round game, because K-State's not going to be there. They're not going to be playing in March Madness, assuming they don't go far in Kansas City. But for the Jayhawks, you had to see the ball fall a couple of times. You had to have a good performance from beyond the arc. And You know, I really did think that they played decent against Baylor and Waco. I wasn't that disgusted and appalled by the way they played. I just thought Baylor was a better team, and they still are. But you look up here and you go, now this opportunity comes back knocking with you. And let's say, in a world that Kansas returns to form, let's say they beat Houston on Saturday. Okay, if they beat Houston on Saturday and Baylor loses, I think, to who do they got on that day? Baylor plays Texas Tech in Lubbock. So we know it can be tough to win in Lubbock. Just ask KU that. But also Tech got smoked by Texas at home by 22 points in their last home game. But they've won back-to-back games against two bottom feeders in West Virginia and Oklahoma State. If Texas Tech beats Baylor, and I believe if KU beats Houston, they catapult themselves back to a Thursday game, which means they get a two-game bye in the tournament. So the opportunity I'm talking about knocking is, okay, you sweep Houston, the Big 12 champ in the regular season. All right, that would put you at 23-8. You then have to win three games in 3 days instead of four. Well, you win those three games, you look up and you're 26-8. And I'd imagine that would mean if you win the Big 12 tournament, which I still believe is not likely, but if they do, they're going through Iowa State and Houston. So you've now split with Iowa State on the season, somebody that finished ahead of you, and you would have had three wins against the Big 12 champ in Houston. Dare I say the top number two seed, maybe even a very outside chance at a one seed is possible? I mean, the committee's going to have to factor that in. That's why you look at Saturday now a little bit more important, but more so of just a great chance for Kansas to do something. They're playing Houston on the road, the number one team in the land. Houston doesn't lose there. If you lose, you lose. KU falls back to a three seed, and they try to win a couple of games in 4 days in Kansas City. Nothing much changes from where you're at right now. But you win, things change a little bit. Things change about how you feel about this team. It's natural. Fans are going to go up and down a lot throughout the season. But for Kansas fans that want a chance to believe, that want to think this team can go far, they've got a great opportunity on Saturday. Because the committee will factor in with their seeding if they sweep the team that won the conference. And then if they win a few in Kansas City, they can. If they beat Houston on Saturday, they'll be a two seed. That's kind of where I'm at. Because I'd imagine they'll win at least two in Kansas City. And even if they do win one and they were to lose to Baylor or Iowa State, I think they could be a two seed because sweeping Houston has a lot of merit with the committee. But if you somehow find a way to come out the other side of the tournament in Kansas City as the champion, you may be a little bit more worn down going into the NCAA tournament, which could be a bad thing, of course. But you also have catapulted yourself into a conversation of a top two seed, and that didn't feel likely after a couple of the games this year. So it makes that game on Saturday a lot more fun. Not as fun as it could have been, where it could have decided the Big 12 championship, who the champion was. But there's something to play for, absolutely, on Saturday. Houston's going to have this thing locked up. They'll be the outright champion. But not many times have you seen Kansas go on the road and play the number one team in the land. That's fun to see. I think it should be a blast on Saturday. Tip-off will be at 3 p.m. on ESPN. You can also listen to pre- and post-game coverage on Sports Radio 810 WHB, as well as the play-by-play, of course. Jake, looking at this game, and then I do want to spend like 5 minutes or so about those comments that Bill Self made in the post-game about Jerome Tang and his staff and this fly-by handshake that happened. But where do you stand now with this team? I'm going to be honest. My thoughts really haven't changed about who they are, because I'm not going to take a home win against Kansas State, something every Kansas team has done since 2006, as, well, now they're going to go far. It's a big-time win in terms of margin of defeat, in the same way it was against Texas, who now looks like they're going to be in the NCAA tournament. So it's a win. It's a big win. It's a blowout win. I don't feel different about this team, but now it feels like there's more opportunity. Whereas if you didn't beat Kansas State by much on Tuesday night, I don't really give them much of a chance beating Houston. Now you go, hell, if they play like that against Houston, which is easier said than done, and they find a way to win, possibilities start opening up for this team. But where do you stand on this?
Well, I'm in the same camp. I thought they looked better against Baylor over the weekend, over last weekend. But what I'm really paying attention to is McCullers looking more healthy. He's looking better. And look, Timberlake is a mystery. Like, because he looked great last night, right? And if you can get that kind of production from him, like, and he doesn't even have to be 18 points, right? It has to be, you know, you have to be a threat from deep. He was 4 or 5, right? And I'm not even, like, 4 or 5 from behind the arc. I'm not looking for that. But can you be a legitimate threat? Can you stretch defenses, you know? Can you be 2 of 4? Can you be 3 of 6, right? Can you, even 3 of 7. I don't know if you want him jacking that many shots up, but if he's if you can run some offense for him, that's legitimate. And I think that's what the team has been missing all year long. You know, they haven't had any production really from Jackson and Timberlake. And when they have gotten the production from those two guys, the team looks like a completely different team. And look, the biggest key, all that is a moot point if McCullers isn't good, right? If he's not healthy, this team cannot withstand that. And they've proven that with him being less than healthy the last, run of 6 or 8 games. You know, that their struggles have come when he has not been right. So that's the most important thing. Is he going to be right going into the tournament and making sure you get him right before that? You know, are you playing for a 2 seed? It's on the table. It's absolutely on the table. Is it as important as being healthy and getting confidence in that 5-6 guy, the 6-7 guy on the bench? I think that is way more important. Those two things, getting McCullers healthy, point A, right? And then B, can you get Jackson and Timberlake some confidence and start involving them in the rotation? And finding out early, right? Because when Timberlake doesn't have it, like, don't press it. But you can find out, you know, within the first 10 minutes of a game whether he's going to be participating properly and not turning the ball over and not making those errors that we've seen him make. And that's why they beat Kansas State the way they did last night, because they're getting production. They were lights out from behind the arc. And, you know, that's not going to be the case. And, look, Kansas State is not a proper litmus test. But, like I said, they looked good against Baylor over the weekend. They didn't get the win on the road, but they looked like they were progressing. And it's like this was the next step. And now you have a big matchup really with nothing to lose going against Houston. Really nothing to lose.
Yeah.
Like, you're playing with house money at this point, and, you know, would it be awesome for them to go in there and get a win? I think it would do a lot for their confidence, especially depending on how they go about doing that. It's on the table for them. But I think going into the tournament, they're probably going to be a 3 seed. And they've proven, right? And you see on Twitter, you hear, oh, they can't beat anybody outside of Allen Fieldhouse. Well, they had some pretty good non-con neutral site wins. Against Kentucky, against Tennessee, you know, so they've proven they can beat, you know. And granted, that was early, that was, you know, pre-conference play, but the talent is there, and I think that's what that proves. And so, I don't know. It's been a weird year for Bill Self. It's been probably his worst season with Kansas in terms of conference play. But it's like, that's your worst season, you're a 3 seed. It's pretty damn good. And they also had some, you know, misses in terms of, you know, this team looks different. You know, if they don't recruit certain players, we don't need to go into that.
Yeah.
Right? But look, they're here. And they still have 3 studs. And I think most teams in this nation would just take 1 stud or 2 studs. And they got 3. And so making sure they're healthy, they're going good at the end of the season, you know, and I think that game against Houston could be a great jumping off point. Even if you lose that game, if you just go in and be competitive for 40 minutes and give them all the shot that they want, you've proven that you can go in a hostile environment and play against the best team in the nation, one of the three best teams in the nation.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
UConn, Tennessee, Houston, those are probably the three, you know, Purdue, those are probably the top four seeds, you know, or at least teams that have a great shot of going to the Final Four, and you're going to go toe-to-toe with one of those teams, and you've already proven that you could beat one of those teams, I think that's a good sign. And so I think this team is sitting, you know, Bill Self, arguably the best coach in the country. You know, we saw what the team looked like without him, and now they have him. You know, last year not being able to coach and be on the sideline for the tournament. So I think this team's in a good spot, and I think they can put themselves in a better spot. And, mm-hmm. and like, that's really all you can ask for right now at this point in time, after the struggles they've had. It's like they're right where they should be. They're right where they're at a good striking distance. So it's like, let's roll the dice. You know, the crazy thing is this team, you know, I'm not going to say it's a Final Four team, but it wouldn't shock me if they went to the Elite Eight. I mean, that mm-hmm. wouldn't shock me, but it also wouldn't shock me if they got knocked out of the first weekend, right?
It's boom or bust.
Right. And so it's like, hey, that's what makes March Madness madness.
I am very much one of those people that believes seeding, it matters a little, just based off of which region you can play in, you know, the matchups you get. But at the end of the day, we saw last year, I mean, 8 seed makes it, or 9 seed makes it, a 4 seed makes it, a 5 seed makes it. There was no 1 seed. Like, at the end of the day, it's about, can you play your best game on that specific day?
Matchups are huge.
It doesn't matter what you did in the regular season. Of course, if you are a 1 seed, you feel good. Like, Houston's feeling much better than they would be a 1 and not a 4.
Right.
And somebody's region, like, you know, KU could be as a 3 seed or a 2 seed. But yeah, it's a lot more on the line on Saturday against Houston. Before we go to break, there was a little bit of drama in the post game, and maybe it's because it's a rivalry. Maybe it's because these coaches just maybe don't have the best of history. I'll tell you this. There was always those rumors that Bill Self and Scott Drew really didn't get along. Like, you'd see those fly-by handshakes, and Jerome Tang coached under Scott Drew for 20 years. So I wonder if there's just a little bit of bitterness from both sides here. But Bill Self brought up the fact that there was a bit of a flyby by the K-State coaching staff. Here's what he had to say after the game.
I didn't see, but did something, was there a thing on the handshake line?
No, and he just didn't want to shake hands, so, or he just did a flyby. It's fine. It's fine.
Hunter had mentioned, it's Hunter had mentioned how it stuck with him, how the K-State game went over in Manhattan. It stuck with him how they celebrated a little more than he thought they would. That kind of, you see that kind of stick with the team in this game, especially since it's a rivalry game?
Yeah, that stuff, the celebration going in the stands, and so we're used to that. So that's not, you know, I will say this, when we got our ass kicked there, we shook everyone's hand and, you know, did a handshake line and all that stuff. So I guess it was different here today. But the whole thing is, that's what happens with rivalries. I mean, that's what happens with rivalries. And if it didn't stick with them, then they probably shouldn't be playing here, you know, because that's, you know, you always want to be your rival.
So that was Bill Self after last night's win against Kansas State. I've always wondered what he thought about Jerome Tang going into the stands and celebrating with the students. I say this, and I have firmly stood by this. If you win, act however you want. You have absolutely earned that right. If you want to rip off your shirt like Eric Musselman did last year in the round of 32, you have every right to do that, right? And I think it's kind of a sore loser's mentality to say, oh, you can't do that. And I don't believe that's what Bill Self is saying here, but you could tell going into tonight, they were irked and they were ticked off a little bit about what happened. And this flyby, I haven't really seen any video pop up of what it could be. If it was a flyby, again, Bill Self said, that's fine. It's a rivalry. It's the way it should be. But this is something to note, though, because I asked this question, Jake. Who was the last K-State coach that, like, Bill Self really got along with? Frank Martin? Bob Huggins, for sure, because we all know that Bill Self's very close with Bob Huggins. And when Huggins was there in the mid-2000s, yes. Frank Martin, I think, did not like Bruce Weber.
No.
And but I Frank don't Martin, think likes Jerome
I
Tang.
I think... Well, I don't think it's about liking somebody. It's just about there was a healthy mutual respect.
Yeah.
And I think this lends itself to I don't want to call it disrespect, but not respecting a simple handshake.
Yeah. It goes a long way, I guess.
Right. I'd say Frank Martin, you know, Bruce Weber and Bill Self would go back and forth in the media, you know, which was entertaining. But I don't know. I think some of it is residual from Baylor, and Scott Drew would rip his team off the court when they were doing intros and stuff like that. Just small, petty stuff to get, you know, try to give his team an advantage on the road, and it never really worked out that well for him. But I think for sure there's some residual from his time with Scott Drew down at Baylor and the riff or whatever you'd like to call it between Self and Scott Drew. Because, you know, within circles there would early in Scott Drew's, you know, tenure, he would call people out for without saying names, but talk about people improperly recruiting, and everybody knew who he was talking about, what he was talking about. Now, look, there, Kansas was guilty of some of that stuff.
Yeah.
It's on the record. So, but to call, you know, coaches out in the media, that's, you know, that's what was going on between Scott Drew and Bill Self 10, 12 years ago. So I'm sure some of that's left over. But
Has to be, yeah, because I don't think I've seen really both sides, I mean, a complimentary of each other. Absolutely. I mean, Tang was complimentary of Bill Self in the post game, and Bill Self had, you know, kind words for Jerome Tang, but also brought up this. And when a coach does that, clearly they were rubbed the wrong way. If it dates back to the Baylor days, I think we'd have a very easy link to that.
Sure. And I think the important part is that he was asked about it, and then he circled back around.
He did. He's like, when we got our asses kicked, as he said, we shook everybody's hand.
He brought it back up, and that for me, that's like he didn't leave it alone. Like he had an opportunity to bring it back up, and he brought it back up, and that's when my antenna went up. Like, oh, this irritates him.
We are seeing last point on this because we do have to rush to break here. We are seeing a very different Bill Self this year. I mean, he's been ejected, he's gotten teed up multiple times, he's shown frustration. And post-game pressers, like, this feels very off-base to him. But like I said, back to that stance, you win, you can act however you want to, really. I don't think anything big is going to come of this. This will probably not be talked about tomorrow or the day after that. And I don't think these teams are going to see each other again in Kansas City. I don't even know, actually, if their brackets would match up. We had to see where all that seeding happens on Sunday after the Big 12 championship, or excuse me, after the regular season finale on Saturday. We'll know, you know, further next week where all the teams fall in the bracket and if KU and K-State are on the same side. All right, we'll take our first break of the show and final break ever here on The Shift and come back, and I'm going to pose a question. Does college basketball have a popularity problem? We'll talk about that next on The Shift on ESPN Kansas City.
I reminisce.
Final 11 minutes of this show. 3-year run coming to an end today. Thank you for all that have been listening throughout the years. But this will be it. Final segment, final 10 minutes. Hoping to close it out strong here on The Shift. I'm your host, Jack Johnson, alongside producer Jake Gutierrez. I want to pose this question specifically here to Jake because he's somebody that's a college basketball fan. I'm a college basketball fan. We've been watching for quite some time. But it was, you know, kind of thrown around there this week about the popularity problem. It was college basketball, men's basketball, I should say. I think women's basketball is as popular as it's ever been because of Caitlin Clark. Men's basketball, to some people, has lost some of its power. Has lost some of its star power, I should say. Because you go back 10 years ago, there were those elite teams, right? Those were those 38-0 Kentucky teams. The Zion Williamson Duke teams. You had those UCLA teams with Kevin Love and Russell Westbrook. You had those Kansas teams, or the Blue Bloods. You'd have really good years with Gonzaga, though they couldn't win a championship. But like the one seeds in the NCAA tournament were one seeds. There was no disputing that. Right? And then you had two seeds that were still very good and three seeds. I think last year showed a lot of us that there really is not a top team in college basketball anymore. It's about can you get hot at the right time? And I believe that's always been the case with March Madness. But we don't really get shocked anymore by the top team losing. Like if Houston loses to Kansas on Saturday, that's a bad comparison because Kansas is still Kansas. They're not going to be considered a massive underdog at Houston. They won't be favored, but it's not going to be a shell-shocking upset. But like this year, we saw UConn lose to Creighton, and we didn't even bat an eye for longer than 20 minutes. Like Creighton's good. Creighton's going to be in the tournament. But a couple years ago, if a Kentucky or a Kansas or a Duke or, you know, a Villanova lost at the top, we're like, damn, that was pretty crazy. Now we're seeing Purdue, well, lose to Farley Dickinson last year in the tournament. We saw them lose to Northwestern early on. Didn't really care that much. It was not, that was a non-con, but it was kind of in that beginning part of the conference slate. It was a weird scheduling for that. Like they played Northwestern really early and they lost. I was like, damn, I think they also lost to Nebraska as well. And we didn't freak out about it. Like Arizona, I guarantee you when I say this, you don't even remember this. Arizona lost to Stanford this year. No mention. And that's where I understand some college hoops fans' side of it's hard to care anymore. Now, I'm not going to hear out the fan bases that team is just garbage, right? Because I used to have a few KU buddies that when KU was really in those dark days of football, the mid-2010s, now it was a decade-plus long stretch, but you know what I'm talking about, the 0-15 year, and they'd be like, well, football's not that popular. I'm like, no, the team sucks. That's why you don't think it's popular. Like this year, Missouri fans saying college basketball doesn't matter, it's because you're 0-17 in conference play. Like that, I'm not going to buy into. But there is a side that I can understand and absolutely relate with that it's hard to connect with some teams and some players because the portal has changed a lot. You have guys playing for different teams in three different years. You know, Caleb Love, I always go back to him. Caleb Love made a name for himself with North Carolina. Goes to the championship game, balls out against Duke, nearly beats Kansas, and then transfers to Michigan for like a month. And then transfers to Arizona. So you have a guy that's been at three universities in a span of a year. Like the portal is going to change a lot of that. And it doesn't allow you to really connect fully with the player. Even for Kansas fans, like Hunter Dickinson, leading the conference in scoring, leading them in rebounding. But he's only been there for 1 year. It's hard to fully embrace a guy.
Not even a year. He's been not there for even. Months.
Yeah, he's been there for months. Yeah. And that's where it's hard now for some college fans, not every. I for one, love the offseason aspect of the transfer portal because it's like free agency. And I'm a sucker for free agency in any sport, any league, pros, college, doesn't matter. And I think it adds a different element because it's like, if my team's bad, I can hit the portal really hard and build a winner. Jerome Tang did it in year one at K-State. There was nobody on scholarship for that team. Went through the portal, they got to the Elite Eight. It used to be, if I'm taking over a terrible program, it's going to take me 3 years to build it up because I have to recruit well. I have to build this roster slowly. This has sped things up, but I think it's also evened out the playing field so much, which for some fan bases, that is good. But we don't fully recognize that the portal has evened out a lot in college basketball. That's why our top teams, I'm not going to say that UConn, Houston, and Purdue are not good. They are fantastic. But they're not that scary elite where even in the tournament, if they lose, I'm not like, holy hell. Like, I will never forget Kentucky at 38-0 losing to Wisconsin in the Final Four. Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker. Like, and it tells you about the popularity of college basketball back then because I just told you two players on Wisconsin. I couldn't tell you last year in some of those big upsets, like, I knew a few of the UConn guys. I couldn't tell you a single name of somebody on San Diego State. I knew Brian Dutcher was the head coach. I couldn't tell you anybody on San Diego State. I couldn't really tell you that much about Florida Atlantic. Miami, I could tell you Nigel Pack because he had ties back here locally. But, you know, 10, 15 years ago, we were all very invested into every team. Like the Big 12 back in its heyday, Missouri, Nebraska, Colorado, you knew about everybody's starting five. If you really watched Big 12 and loved Big 12 basketball, now you'll play like Oklahoma State or West Virginia or UCF, Cincinnati. Those two new teams, I'm not going to buy too much into that or lean too much into that because they're new. Like West Virginia and Oklahoma State, you don't know much about them. You used to. Even the bad teams in the conference, you knew about them. And now I've heard so many fans say, well, it's hard to follow. I think the problem is right now there's over-officiating. There's too many fouls, too many free throws. Nobody wants to see a free throw contest. And hopefully that changes for the NCAA tournament because that's the best thing about college sports, in my opinion, is the NCAA tournament, March Madness. You have that. You have this glorious thing. Don't ruin it with free throw shooting contest. Before we wrap it up, Jake, where do you stand on this? Do you feel like college basketball is struggling with its popularity? Men's, I should say. Like I said, women's, as popular as it's ever been. Men's, ratings-wise, struggling a little bit. Do you think that there is a problem that can't be fixed? Or do you think it's maybe just this year? Or do you think, hey, it's no problem. I still think it's really popular.
It's hard to say. It is different, though. It is definitely different. And I think you're seeing that with, like, what, the last 3 years, number two seed's been knocked out in 21, 22, yeah. and 23.
Quick.
So
quick
exits. Yeah, so it's like teams, like, and before that, it's like maybe it happened four or five times.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like the game is drastically changing. You know, which makes, you know, the NCAA tournament more exciting. What a number one seed didn't lose until, what, Virginia in 18? And
yep.
then it happened again to Purdue, you know. And so the landscape is changing. It is the only game right now where they have two halves, right? And so that is, I mean, like, it's the only, like, internationally, NBA, women's college basketball, they all play four quarters. I'm an old school guy. I like the two halves.
I do too.
It's me kind of hanging on to nostalgia, mm-hmm. I think, a little bit. I don't know if it would make the game more exciting. It would change it. And look, this, it's different because even for locally, it's like Hunter Dickinson. Like, he came in, and I mean, I love the guy. I love watching him play.
Yeah.
But it's like you don't have the ties like you did to Collison and Heinrich and all these guys that you saw over 4 years. Now, Kansas is unique, and, like, we've had a lot of the Frank Masons, you know, the guys that do stick around all 4 years.
Yeah.
Harris, you know, like, Kansas still does have those players that, you know, Bill Self identifies and then, you know, molds them into better players, and they become great players over 4 years. Yeah, I think there's a problem. I don't know if there's anything they can really do about it, but I also think it has nothing to do with basketball. I think a lot of it has to do with the NFL. Honestly, like, I hate
saying, a great point.
I hate saying that, but, like, the NFL now has become an all-year league,
mm-hmm.
right? Where it used to be like, okay, the NFL's done, Super Bowl's over. All right, now it's college basketball.
Mm-hmm.
When that's, like, you know, it's not like that anymore. You got the combine now. Free agency
yep.
starts next week, and it's like, the NFL has just taken over all of the sports landscape all year long. So I think some of it has nothing to do with college basketball. I think a lot of that has to do with just the King Kong that has been created out of the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, football is going to be king. We all know that. Even college football, man. It's like they put so much stock into regular season games, or I say regular season. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to call it regular season. Even it's non-con, it matters. You lose two games and you're a top contender. It was tough to get in the college football playoffs. But again, I'm still excited for the NCAA tournament. Everybody is. But I do think there's a little bit of a lack of popularity problem right now in college hoops. Well, that is going to officially do it. Our final show of The Shift on ESPN Kansas City. I've been your host, Jack Johnson. The producer has been Jake Gutierrez. We thank you so much for all of you following over the last 3 years. Don't worry, there will still be a way to listen to me moving forward. But as for this show, that is going to do it. For myself, for Jake, again, thank you so much. And for the last time, you take it easy, Kansas City. I'll have to pack my things and go.